My name is Anshu Mehta, and I'm the same solar generator PMC member, being associated with the project for a long enough time, I think. I've been working with the team since 2006 now. And obviously, been involved with various social media stuff. Did they do something?
Oh, yeah.
So, let's talk a little bit about solar before we dive deeper into what this talk is all about. Solar as a community, as a project, is pretty
okay.
It's been pretty active. If you look at the number of commits, 12-month summary, I don't know what's going on there. But yeah, the community itself is pretty vibrant, very active. We've been adding committers and contributors pretty actively over the past. Moving on to the solar cloud overview, diving deeper into what is solar and how things work. So traditionally, solar used to be this search engine, which you could start off, and it wasn't really meant to work in distributed mode. You could still work with solar in a master slave kind of a setup. So all you had was just one instance. You could send data into it. You could get data out from it. You could get response out of it. You could query your data, do whatever you wanted, but it was not really distributed. So things were pretty straightforward back in the day. But a few years ago, we realized that use cases were changing. People had way more data than they used to traditionally have, and so there was need for supporting distributed systems, distributed indexes in solar. And what that led to is an architecture that looks like this. And for the sake of simplicity, the diagram right now has just two nodes, node 1 and node 2. In a production environment with way more data, you probably have many more instances, many more nodes there. And if you really look at it, they're all talking to each other. They're also talking to ZooKeeper, which is used for configuration management, also for messaging mechanism between the nodes themselves. And then you've got clients and load balancer or some form of a middle layer in the middle that talks to your solar cluster. One thing I'd like to clarify here is, contrary to popular belief, a lot of people think that solar cloud is actually solar running in the cloud, which got something to do with AWS or Microsoft Azure or something. That's not the case. It's basically solar with its capabilities that work in the distributed environment, that's basically solar cloud. So features that work in the distributed world is basically solar cloud. So solar cloud API is giving you a little bit of history of when all of this effort started. Yannick and Mark started this effort off. The idea was, let's get something up and running so that we can see replicated charts work well in a distributed kind of fashion. And APIs weren't really thought about. The idea was, let's create a core, which is basically an index, and it would automatically create a collection. There weren't any APIs to create a collection to anything. And so, the first version of Solar Cloud was released without any such APIs. So you could still hack it and work around with things, but there was no clean way of doing things like creating an API, creating a collection. And so what happened is, after the first release, there was a realization you needed APIs. We added a create collection API, which allowed you to start off with, you create a new collection with, say, X number of shards with a specific config set and stuff like that. But it was way too less as compared to what was it really needed, right? So just to create API was not enough. We needed a delete API, we realized, so we added a delete API, then we realized we needed config changes every now and then, which required reloading of the collection itself. So we needed reload APIs. We kept on needing more APIs, and we kept on adding those every now and then. And what we ended up with was something that looks like this. So what we have right now is a bunch of APIs. I've highlighted the one in blue separately because that's just a different endpoint that manages config sets. Everything else goes to the collection admin endpoint. That lets you do a whole bunch of things. with your sort of cloud cluster. So you can go ahead and create a collection, delete a collection using an API, split a shard if your shard, if a specific shard as per your distribution grows too big as compared to what your target would be. You can split a shard, you can do a bunch of stuff using these APIs. But the way I look at it, it's basically these APIs by themselves are not enough, which means you cannot just take an API, say, split shard, and because the shard gets loaded up, you cannot just hit that shard or hit to the cloud with a split shard call and assume everything's going to be fine. These are nothing but, the way I see it, they're like Lego blocks. So you have a bunch of APIs that are capable enough of doing things which are fairly low level, but in order to accomplish anything in your production environment, you basically need to stitch a bunch of these together. Not only do you need to stitch all of these together, you need to know when, you need to know how, and you need to know how to make sure that whatever you were trying to do actually was accomplished, right? So, as I just said, just calling an API does not work, so you cannot just go ahead and call split shard and assume things are going to work fine for you. You need to call them in a sequence. You need to one detect when do you need to split shard, right? So you need to know now when do I need to split shard as opposed to when do I need to add a replica or delete a shard. What is it that I need to do and when? The second one is you want to make sure that you can actually call the API that that you're trying to call, and it's going to be safe enough for your cluster. Your cluster is not going to go off balance, and you're not going to get into a state that's bad for your production environment, right? The third one would be you actually, once you make sure that you know you want to call an API, you know it's safe enough to call that API, you go ahead and call the API actually. And once that's done, you want to really go back and check that your API completed, or your bunch of APIs completed, and you've now achieved the final target state that you originally intended to do. So one thing I realized was over the last 2-3 years, I think in front of the mirror, I've been noticing something really interesting, which was this was stuff that was pretty standard. So people needed to split shards to grow their data set. When their data set grew, people needed to add replicas. When their traffic grew, people needed to delete stuff. People needed to, so there were these things which are very basic to a Solar Cloud cluster, but there was nothing that was available from within Solar. And so all the organizations that were using Solar at scale or using Solar in production were working on these in-house cluster management tooling mechanisms where they'd monitor your Solar Cloud cluster using whatever was offered by Solar Cloud back then. And then all of them would talk about, we have this cluster management tool that does this, and then another organization would do exactly the same thing. Surprisingly, they were actually making the same mistakes, not knowing the nuances of the APIs themselves. And going back and realizing somebody else had actually built the same thing, but there was still no contribution in the open source world. So what was going on was people were working in silos, and all this was happening, but it never got back up, upstream. So that led to an idea about why don't we go ahead and build a framework that allows people to actually build something like this. The most basic part of this would reside inside the project itself, but for everything else, it would be extendable. It would be stuff that people could still extend, and if they needed to talk to a third-party monitoring system that was proprietary to them, they could still do that. So that led to an idea of having a framework that that fit into the entire system, so people stopped duplicating effort. And we realized we needed basically four things. The first one being the basic APIs. We had about 90% of them. I just showed you the number of APIs we have right now. That allows you to do stuff like adding a replica, deleting a replica, moving things around. You had APIs for all of those. The second thing that we did was, which was also my first point in terms of managing your cluster, which is knowing when to call these APIs. So you needed metrics. So you needed to know when things were going in a particular direction, and you needed to call when things happened. So we needed metrics. We also needed triggers based off the metrics that we would have. We had nothing, and we put it that way. At that point, we had nothing, and we thought we needed, basically, the evidence, what we had. We needed metrics, we needed triggers, and then we also needed recipes. Almost everyone was, they had some form or the other of recipes. So when they were splitting shards, they were almost trying to do the same stuff, but in a different order. Everyone had their own way of doing the same thing. So we decided we could generalize a lot of this. For example, moving things around or splitting a shard is a rather basic task. Requires some parameters, and once you have those parameters, everything else should be done in a specific manner. So we started off with that, and we created like an umbrella Jira to start working on this.
Can you reconnect it, because you gotta exit the presentation and go back in. There's nothing there.
It's the
adapter.
No. Did something come up there? I see some flicker.
If I get another laptop.
At 9 o'clock. Let me just switch the board. Do you want to switch that? Do you want to switch the input on that one to HDMI? Because I don't see anything going on.
It is in HDMI. I know because it's in the top right, it says HDMI every time it triggers.
Yeah, I don't think I can see anything here. Sorry about that, guys.
So the first thing that I said that we needed was for metrics, right? A few months ago, Christine reviewed much of that stuff as well. In 6 or 6 feet, metrics were added. So prior to those metrics being a part of Solr, the only way for anyone to figure out what was going on inside of Solr was using ZMX. That was the only way things were exposed in Solr, which also meant that it didn't really give people an option of, or users, the option of looking at historical data. It only would give you a snapshot of what was going on in the system at that very moment, right? So if you wanted 1989, if you needed historical data, if you wanted a histogram of how things looked over the last 15 minutes, you couldn't get anything, remotely similar. The only way back then was for you to pull that data in into a third-party system and then maintain all of this history and then reamount. So DropWizard API, which is an API that allows you to add metrics to your system, was used to add support for metrics in Solr, Solr Cloud. And it allows you to add things like counters, meters, histograms, timers, and gauges, all used for different purposes, obviously. So you've got timers for measuring timing of requests, counters, which are basic simple plain counters, histogram for historical data, and so on and so forth. And metrics, the way they're structured right now in Solr is you've got 5 top-level metrics, right? So you've got the JVM level metrics. You've got the node level metrics. So how many of you are Solr Cloud or Solr users? Probably most. So So when I say node level, it's also, I might also say core container level, which is basically in terms of Solar Cloud or in terms of Solar, an instance has a core container that basically contains all the cores on that machine, on that instance. And cores are basically in it. So you've got JVM level metrics, you've got node level metrics, or is it the core container level metrics, you have the core level metrics, you have HTTP and JETI level. So you've got five different levels of metrics, or groups of metrics. The interesting thing here is they're not refreshed when you reload the core or do any of these operations. The only time when these get refreshed and they get dropped off is when you restart an instance. So if you have Solar running in production and you, for some reason, need to restart an instance, it would be best to, depending upon how you're reading metrics off of your Solar instances, that you read these metrics before you restart it. So in Solar, all these metrics or groups of metrics are referred to as registries. And let's dive a little deeper into the kind of registries. So the first one is the JVM registry. So the JVM registry gives you an insight into how the JVM looks, the JVM on which your Solar instance is running. So you get information about heaps and threads and garbage collection, and you can get all of this information to get an idea about how Solar is behaving, or if there's some weird behavior that you're experiencing, you can basically figure out what's going on. The second would be the node level registry, which basically gets you information of the top level instance level instance information. It doesn't give you index level information; it just gives you the top level information. So if it's an admin level stuff, so if you're looking at configuration API calls, if you're looking at admin API calls, collections API calls, you get information about those at the node registry. It would be much better with the diagrams, but
Excuse me, do you have it on OneDrive or something that you can?
No.
You have a way to upgrade or upload it to another computer?
That could take time. I think we're probably going to run out.
Yeah. Oh, you don't have time for it?
Yeah, if I copy it and then move it around.
So you don't have it? You don't have time for that?
Yeah, it's kind of, let's just try that one more time. If it doesn't work, let's just. I'm going to share the presentation then.
That's the problem, that these computers don't have USB,
I do have
UI,
USB.
No display port, no nothing, they just
yeah.
have
the... Sorry about that, but...
Jay, this has no power. This is a different kind of power. No power.
Yeah, let me try this. This should work.
This computer's out of power. It's not the right power here.
So,
you don't have the VGA adapter to that computer, right?
Not on this one, no. But I can copy this one.
Trying to get another laptop. This one has no power.
So do you want to just skip it maybe? And just yeah, I copied it, but
so if you want, it's right here.
Okay.
Just keep going along.
Yeah.
Have it up. So you want to have
yeah.
it up.
Okay. Let's just get back to this. Probably get done with it. There's core level registry that gets you index level information. So we had the node level registry that gives you information about top level calls, like the collections API calls that gets you information regarding aggregated tours, how many lazy loader tours there are, and anything that should be available at the document for the instance. And that's not operating system or JVM. So you get all that information from the node registry. The core registry gets you information about the index-specific stuff. So for example, the number of reads, the number of writes, the number of information about merging of indexes. You get all that information from your core level registry. Then you have the HTTP level registry that gets you open, available, and pending connections. So basically, HTTP information. When I was running, I didn't really get too many numbers of this, but yeah. You can get that. And then you have the Jetty registry that gets you information about Jetty threads and thread pool. So everything that Jetty manages that's beyond the scope of, say, the index itself or the core container or the JVM. You get all that information from the Jetty registry.
So how do you get information?
So, I've spoken about having registries that now expose a ton of information, that expose stuff like histogram information, so historical data. You get counters, you get meters, you get gauges, so that you can measure, say, current size of the queue, stuff like that. You get all of that information right now. But how do you get it out of the system? So Solar has all of these registries. How do you get it out? One way to go about is using the old school metrics API. So it's a REST endpoint. You can specify. You can ask for specific groups of information. You can say, this is the group that I want. I want to filter the data that I want by this prefix, and you can pull it off. So you can get it back in form of a JSON or XML, whatever response writer you choose in the Solr. But what that basically means is it would come in handy if you're using existing tools or scripts or stuff that's not Java, because earlier with only JMX, you needed Java to be able to read JMX. Now you could read JSON information and do stuff in your own shell script if you want to. But that's not nice enough, right? I mean, still having to pull this information in periodically, having a thread run or a scheduler somewhere, does not make a lot of sense. So, there's a concept that was also introduced along with all the other metric stuff, which is reporting. So now Solr has reporters, right? So what would reporters do? Just like reporters, yeah.
What version was that?
6.3. What would reporters do? Just like journalists or reporters in general, they keep a track of what's going on. You send them up to look, to observe or monitor a certain thing. They keep a track of what's going on, and if you subscribe to them, they keep on informing you about what's going on, right? So they aggregate information, they tell you about what's going on, and you don't have to go and ask for it. You can turn on the TV and you consume that information, right? So you can set up reporters in Solr starting with version 6.3. And then we have four supported reporters that you can configure right now. You need to configure this in Solr.xml. It's pretty straightforward, pretty trivial. The four supported reporters right now are for JMX, yes, SLF4J, so that if you wanted to log stuff onto a log file, you could use the SLF4J reporter. There's the Graphite reporter and the Gambia reporter, both of them being hard to set up, honestly speaking, but if you have systems that are yeah, you can still use these reporters. You can configure the interval that you want to push certain metrics to. So you can say every 60 seconds, push out information about the JVM to this instance of it, right? So you can, it's just three lines of configuration in your Solr.xml, and you will be good to go. Now, that lets you report to existing systems. One impression to note here is that you can have multiple reporters. So you don't really need to define everything in one single reporter who's gonna, push data to a single system. You can set up reporters saying, I want to set up a reporter that reports all my Jetty and HTTP information to my Gambia instance, which is running on this, at this location. I want all of my container level information to be running, to be exported to the SLF4J log.
You think that's not
gonna
work?
That's okay.
It's gonna work, but now you have it on key. That's Apple. This is Mac. This is not a Mac. So it is working, but One thing is making the projector work, another thing is making the power pad.
Should I just, yeah, should I just close this thing? Actually, I need this.
So yeah,
you say is the connect, is your connector, is this the one?
Yeah, I can, if that works, like, I'll switch.
Can you make your presentation into a part? Can PowerPoint pull up your presentation because you gotta get on keynote?
No, it's gonna take. You know
how much time do you have? You're almost done, right?
Yeah, I have about 20 minutes, so I think I'm just gonna get that
the damage.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Can you
just
turn
it around?
Yeah.
You can configure the reporter pretty easy by putting those lines in your server.xml. This one's called a JPEG reporter. So all this requires is, so if you want to configure a reporter in your server.xml, you need to specify one group of what registries you want to report for every reporter instance that you want to create. You have to specify what Java class does the implementation of this thing apply in. So in this case, it's the server.jpg reporter. And you have to specify the name of the reporter itself. That's how all the different reporters are going to be segregated. Everything else in there that are parameters that are specific to this reporter. So if you need to create a custom reporter, you could do that by just extending the reporter, pertaining to the name of the class. But it's pretty straightforward to do, and you can extend the reporter class. Once you do that, you can specify it, you can pass in more parameters, you can write to your proprietary systems, whatever you want. So that would let you push information from Solr automatically at periodic intervals that you can configure. The default for the current supported systems is 60 or something. One of the notice here is if you configure your reporters, they are going to give you a warning, but they're going to be ignored. So if you will configure them and don't look at your logs and come back a day later expecting the kind of data, you couldn't really have any. So it would not, so the point I'm trying to make here is that it's not going to abort your instance stuff, right? So if you want to really make sure, I would recommend that you make sure that your folders are well configured before you. So here's the JPEG reporter right there that requires a host port and also makes a parameter that says trigger. Trigger is basically encrypted or non-encrypted. If you specify trigger, it's optimized for JPEG, which is good because the network transmission is way more efficient as compared to the plain text. You might also want to specify the purposes, but that's what we're discussing. But other than that, if you were not to pick in your JPEG reporter, then any reporting tool or not, any monitoring tool that accepts data in the format that I mentioned there, which is basically the name of the metric, the value separated by place, followed by value of that metric, followed by the timestamp. If there's any system that you're running that can accept data in this format, you can use the JPEG reporter to send data in without having to write your own custom reporter, as long as you don't pick it, as long as you don't convert it into a format that will be JPEG. So all this while, you've noticed one thing. All of this discussion has been around JVM level, it's level for container level, or level, right? So we've never not talked about what happens at the connection level, because we all started off with solar cloud got distributed set up, and then you should be able to communicate among each other. There's a ton of communication. Well, sorry to disappoint you, but right now, solar cloud does not support collection level aggregation of metrics. Your best bet right now is to aggregate in your systems that you're using, so if, you can set a reporter to push this information in a manner that that can then be aggregated at your receiver. So you would have to do that manually. The best way to go about it would be to have the community add a reporter that connects that. So the next thing is recipes, right? I mean, it wouldn't be too much fun if all you have is just lime or just ice or just lime. So we have a ton of APIs, we have a ton of metrics, but them by themselves will not really solve anything for you. You could look at the metrics, but if you're not going to use it, it wouldn't solve anything. So you could have the APIs, but if you don't switch them back into a trigger or something, then that wouldn't do the job either. So let's look at an example of how a recipe might look. Right? So why I say just a single API will not do the job for you? Why do you need multiple? So for example, if you wanted to reduce query latency, you could monitor your core metrics, core registry, and figure out, and you could come to the conclusion that your QPS is right now going to the loop. It's a good time to reduce your query latency by adding more replicas. Right? So you basically want to add an ad, to, you want to trigger an ad replica. Now, what do you want to check at that moment, right? So that's the part about getting a trigger by looking at registry. The second part being, what do you want to check before you actually go ahead and call map? You really want to be sure that you have an active leader for the shard you want to call an app. Honestly, right now, Solar, the way it works is, it's the responsibility of the end user to make sure that they have an active replica when they're calling ad replica. I mean, they have an active leader when they're calling ad replica. If that's not the case, if you were to call an ad replica without an active, without a valid legitimate leader, the new replica that comes up is going to wait for a certain duration, and after which it's going to go ahead, log it, but announce that it couldn't find another leader that was worthy enough, and so it's presuming you no data. So if you're, it's the user's responsibility to make sure that you don't get into that state. You don't call ad replica when you do not have a valid legitimate leader to replicate your data. So you want to check for that, and then you want to actually call ad replica using a replica placement strategy so that you wisely or sort of wisely puts the replica to the right location. So it does not put your replica on a different track if you don't want it, or does not put your replica on any instance that does not have enough disk space or has a lot of cores on it, right? If you do not use the replica placement strategy, the placement right now is pretty much random. So it's super useful to use a replica placement strategy, which is basically defining a set of rules about how you want your replicas to be placed. You can specify in terms of available disk space, active cores on an instance, and so on and so forth. There's a bunch of stuff. So that was about increasing, that was about reducing the latency. What about indexing the, increasing the indexing throughput, right? You really want to split your index at that point. You have one shard that's receiving all your indexing update, or update requests, and there's a point where you're like, okay, it probably makes sense for me to split both of these into two separate shards so that I can go ahead and split my runs. And you would want to call a split shard at that moment. And if you call a split shard at that moment, there are again a few checks that you want to do. Checks like, so the way a split shard works right now is it replicates or creates two sub shards on the current leader. So it's basically going to need quite the amount of disk space that your index is just to replicate, because it's going to leave the current leader of the shard as is. It's not going to change anything there, and it's going to exactly replicate it to two sub-shards on the same space. You want to be sure that you're not going to run out of disk space before you trigger a split run. So after you've done all of those checks, all using APIs, you're going to go ahead and obviously you want to be sure that you have an active user to do any of this. So you're going to call a cluster state API to make sure you have your cluster or your collection is in a healthy state. Call a split charge. Once that happens, because all of these are long-running operations, you would also want to call these as async calls. You wouldn't want to call these as regular calls because HTTP would time off. Your request would go away and would take minutes, maybe hours, depending on how your index looks. And before you know, your HTTP comes back saying, timed out. Sooner is accepting the request, it's processing that request. And unless you go back into the logs, there's no way to figure out what happened. Or you can look at the cluster state and kind of safely but not confidently assume that things can be fine. And then you can still look at the Azure UI because that does not support the few things that are required for split charge. So you want to fire the trigger this as an async call so that you can go back and check the status of the call. The async call can then be forwarded to check whether the request completed successfully or it did not complete successfully. Also, fetch the response that was generated at the end of it. Right, so, and once you're done with that, you go ahead and check your cluster state to be sure that your split charge can be. We have more audience. So. Yeah. So what's next? What we have right now is a bunch of metrics. We've got APIs. But there's still something missing from the original slide that I showed to you about the idea about what we really want, which are the triggers, right? So we have a way to observe and monitor the metrics. We even push them using reporting systems, using reporters and third-party tools. And we have APIs to actually implement things like spray the shard, or we can round, but we don't have any triggers, right? So in case of events, nothing happens. So there's ongoing work in a separate branch as part of the project itself that if you guys are interested, you can take a look at it. The link to that is in the references to this slide. There's addition of triggers to the entire idea of this framework, which can be invoked by using schedules, so you can have scheduling mechanisms that invoke triggers. You can have manual invocation, which is basically a REST endpoint. We call it, if you want to invoke a trigger, we call it REST endpoint. Or you can have cluster events. Cluster events, some of them have already been added in folder, things like node added or node left. You can now configure things like, I want to set a trigger that kicks in if in the event of a node addition, if nothing is done to that node for 10 minutes, then execute something, right? So you can define a plan. And you can do three things basically, three actions for each plan. And you can specify the order in which you want to do that. So you can compute a plan, you can execute a plan, or you can log it. Or you can do a combination of zero or more. So it could be a no-op, it could be for development purposes, let's say you want to create something which says, in case a node leaves and does not come back for the next 10 minutes, I want an add replica, but I don't want to execute the add replica call. All I want to do is basically create this plan and log. Don't execute. Right. So you can define all of that, and suppose for that we add on a feature branch. That work is still in progress. And yeah, there's more. We have triggers and monitoring and reporting and APIs. We can do a bunch of this, but we need an ongoing thread that basically tracks triggers and events and stuff like that, so that everything kind of ties back in, right? Ties back together. 7.0 is going to be the next major release. I don't think this is going to make it in there, but our release will happen really frequently. This point when we would release every month. And I think this thing is pretty high on what people want. The addition of a monitoring head that's going to constantly monitor stuff and add, and report stuff and trigger stuff and tie everything that I just spoke about together. And the auto-scaling endpoint that's also been committed, again, on a separate branch, it's not been merged yet, but it's going to be released with 7.0, hopefully sometime next month. The auto-scaling endpoint, yes, not the monitoring part, but the auto-scaling, yes. And that would certainly set the ball rolling for more tradition into actual releases rather than stuff going into a separate branch. And yeah, when, once all of this comes together, it's going to be really nice. So, yeah. I hope it would happen in 7, in 7, with only in the 7X series, not in 7, that's too much to ask for. And one more thing that's changing is because there's an addition of the cluster management these things. So another link that in the references is the design document for all of the other stages. It's a long document, but it's super interesting. It talks about how the panel for everything is going to be. It talks about how you can set, define triggers, you can set rules, define plans. And once you are able to, so right now the automatic template operation strategy is a very different and I think contributed grammar. Uses five cards, star, and standard complicated. It's going to be way more robust, way more easier to read and understand, and it's going to be the new design. So that's going to change completely. Most probably it's going to be deprecated by 7. The current one is going to be deprecated in 7, and we will have all of this rolling in 7 with at least support for existing stuff, and then you're going to have to. And you can read more about all of this. And thank you so much for sharing with all the stuff that was going on around here. So we'll be around if you have any questions that are related to this or not related to this but related to solar. So I'm going to do that and I'm gonna hold this. Any questions?
Are there plans to integrate any of this in Admin UI?
That's a nice question. The way the community is working so far, or has worked so far, is there are very few people who work or understand the language speaking. And that's the reason why this flip chart stuff that I mentioned, I think we've used it in 4 documents. Right now we're at 10 documents. A bunch of that stuff has not gone back into the admin design. There, at any given point in time, there's one, perhaps the most 2 people working on the admin design. That too, as part of their interest in the project, not as part of their interest.
Right.
So we would love to see this as part of the admin UI. It's just that I don't think we have the bandwidth right now, but if someone wants to contribute, that would be amazing. Yeah, I mean, it certainly makes things way more easier than APIs for a lot of people. I know a lot of people prefer the terminal or the server as opposed to the admin UI, but people who love the admin UI, that's the way. I think that it is Angular. Yeah, it's Angular JS now. Anyone knows that stuff and is interested. Please, I mean, I'm going to do, I like mentioned during this talk, like how almost all Apache projects can do with UI or interfaces. We certainly can. The admin UI that you have, we try to keep up. We don't really do any meetings on it. I mean, we've done a decent job in the recent talk, but it'd be good to have someone who really has that skill that could pitch in instead of someone else trying to do that. And being stuck up for days at ends, like when people don't understand this. We really want to do this, but we could either build these 3 new things or add this change the color if in case the node goes from after. Yeah, when I tried doing that, I couldn't, and so I gave up. So it could be just me, but yeah. Okay then, we'll be around.